Last week, we heard from 1 Samuel and talked about the principle that we find in the New Testament, where the Apostle Paul said that all of the things that happened to Israel in the Old Testament were there for our instruction. That the historical narratives, the stories we read in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Bible, are serving to be instructive for us, to help us learn and grow and understand. And so last week, we talked about how it was that the Israelites had gotten to a point of demanding that they be given a king. They had been led by judges, men and women that would come up and would deliver them from the challenges of people that were assaulting them from outside. And now Samuel had been doing that for decades, but they thought, you know what, it's time for us to be like other nations. We want to have a king. And they were demanding that from God. And so we talked about how the problem that was being displayed here is that the people of Israel were not trusting God. They were not surrendering to God. They were not recognizing that God was their king and had always been their king. And now they got to a point where they wanted to have things their way. And so God, talking to Samuel, because Samuel was the prophet who would speak the words of God to the people, God said to Samuel, look, take it easy. They're not rejecting you. It's really me they're rejecting. But tell them this, that they really don't want to have a king, because if they have a king, there's going to be a whole host of issues that are going to come up. There's going to be all this overhead that needs to be paid to cover the cost of a royal palace. Your sons are going to be put into military service. Your daughters are going to be employed as perfumers and bakers and cooks. And really, this isn't a great idea. And so Samuel delivered that message. The people nevertheless persisted, saying, no, we want to have a king just like everybody else. And so Samuel brought that message back to God, and God said, all right, let's give them a king. So that's what we talked about last week. And we understood the lesson being that we need to make sure that we are not ones who try to put our desires and our requests and our demands even over against the Lordship of God. This week, however, we see things change a little bit. Once again, there is going to be a reference made to a person to become king, but this is a different person than the person God ended up talking about and anointing as having Samuel anoint as king the first time. And so let's fill in the gaps a little bit. What happened after this had taken place last week? Well, God said to Samuel, here's what we're going to do. I am going to select the person who will be the king that Israel wants. They want a king so bad, they're demanding a king, they're rejecting me, but they want to have a king just like the other nations. Okay, I am going to go ahead and tell you who that person is. And so God, who has been the king over Israel all along, still maintains that role and says to Samuel, here's what's going to happen. There are going to be a number of circumstances that unfold before you, and you're going to find this particular man come to you, and that man will be the one who will be the king. And so Samuel goes out, and sure enough, these circumstances and events happen. This man appears. He's a head taller than everybody else, and Samuel goes, this must be the guy, and God says, yes. And so Samuel takes Saul and privately anoints him to be king. Says, you're the one that God has chosen to be king. And then, short time later, Samuel brings Saul out in public and tells all of Israel, this man is now to be your king. And Israel is happy with the choice. They're saying, yes, he's exactly the kind of person we want to have a king. That is definitely king material. We're happy that you've chosen Saul. Saul, you're going to be our king. And Saul was a good candidate, too, in the sense that he was actually kind of reluctant to be king. I got to say that if someone says, oh, pick me, I want to be king, you probably want to stay away from that person in being the monarch. But then the Ammonites attack Israel, and Saul rises up and gets an army together and fights against the Ammonites and delivers Israel from them. And now all the people together gather around and say, let us reaffirm that we are happy to have Saul be our king. So what we see in this circumstance is God takes the initiative, identifies the person who's supposed to be king, and the people are absolutely happy with this choice. And what they see in Saul is exactly the kinds of things they're looking for as a king. The one thing God adds to the mix is he lets Israel know, as he's speaking through Samuel the prophet, if you and your king continue to trust me and follow my ways, all will go well with you. If, however, that doesn't happen and you or your king move away from me, then things are not going to work out the way they should. Well, it doesn't take too long before that's exactly what happens. Saul ends up being rebellious. He ends up being self-centered. He ends up being impatient. He doesn't listen to Samuel's instruction, which is, by extension, the instruction of the Lord. He becomes impatient and just takes it upon himself to do things. And this happens on more than one occasion, to the point where God says, all right, I have to invoke what it is I told Israel about, and I'm rejecting Saul as king. And then we come to today's reading, where we learn that Samuel is told by God to go to a particular family, and God will show Samuel who is to be king instead. And we find that David is the one, the youngest of eight sons, who was identified to be the king over Israel. And so now we see a king truly of God's choosing, in God's time, according to God's plan and God's purpose, because this had been God's intention all along. It's not like he wasn't wanting Israel to have a king. It just was, you guys are 40 years too early. You're demanding a king now. I have in mind to give you a king, but it's too soon. You're not paying attention to me. And here we see who that king is meant to be. Now, we look at that scenario, and we can see how the story goes and see how it unfolds. But once again, if we're asking ourselves the question, what is it that we can learn from this? We might find things to be a little puzzling, perhaps. Where do we go with this? Is this just simply another message of making sure that we trust God and all of that? Well, sure. But there's another aspect of reading these Old Testament narratives that I think we have to keep in mind. And the first thing is, as we talked about last week, looking at what Israel does as a people, as a nation, even as individuals, we can see that Israel and all the individuals who make up ancient Israel definitely are very human characters. They have depth. They have different motivations. They've got some kind of substance. There's layers involved in what Israel is doing. And we can see that and we can embrace that. And just like when we read a good novel, and we see good character development, and we see things that aren't necessarily as predictable as we might expect, we are engaged with that. We embrace that, because that reflects the complexity of life. But I would suggest to you, we often have difficulty seeing God as a character like that. In fact, even thinking of God as a character in the story might even seem strange to start with. But as we read the narratives, there's no question. God is one of the characters in the story. And God also has complexity and depth and layers. But let me suggest to you that I think sometimes we forget that. That rather than seeing God as a character as we would in a well-written novel, sometimes we have an oversimple view of God. We almost see him more like a comic book character than a character in a well-written novel. And when I say comic book character, I don't mean cartoony. That's not what I mean. But traditionally, you know, you think back to comics that have been produced over the years. And I mean, I know nowadays we have these graphic novels which are far more substantial and developed. But typically a comic is a fairly straightforward, simple story. You've got the villain and all he wants to do is see the world burn. And you've got the hero and all he does is fight the villain and thwart his purposes and stuff. But the characters in a comic book don't go much further. They're fairly shallow. It's very simple. The one movie that I watched 5 times in the theater, so I paid to watch this movie 5 times, was back in the late 80s. It was Tim Burton's Batman, the one starring Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson as the Joker. Man, I love that movie. It was so reflective of a recent Batman comic that had come out back then. And I thought it was amazing. I kept watching it over and over again. And then I heard they were going to make a sequel. I couldn't wait for the sequel. And the sequel came out and I went to watch that movie. And it was... yeah. Now, Danny DeVito's Penguin character was pretty creepy. True. But what I realized fairly quickly is these characters had nowhere to go for the sequel. They were comic book characters. There was no character development to display. There was nothing more to do. All you had is new characters. Penguin shows up, Catwoman shows up, and that's it. And the movie was incredibly unsatisfying, and I never watched it again and didn't watch the third one that came out either, because comic book characters don't have anywhere to go in their development. I say that to say that I think sometimes we treat God as a character like that. We think of God, okay, he's the all-powerful one, and he never makes mistakes, and he's perfect, and he doesn't lie, and all that. So he's just straightforward, absolute purity, and so when you encounter God, it's just as simple as that. And that's what God is, and so there. That's who God is. But then we read a sentence like the one that we read at the beginning of our reading, when Penny was reading the first reading. This sentence said this: the Lord was sorry that he made Saul king over Israel. When we read that sentence, we can be kind of confused. It's like, how do I take that now? Hold on. What does this mean? God was sorry that he made Saul king over Israel. Like, does that mean that God made a mistake? Does that mean that God failed? That God was wrong? Does that mean that God screwed up? If we have a comic book understanding of God, this very thin understanding of God's character, and don't appreciate that there is depth and complexity in who God is, then we're going to find ourselves in a difficult place trying to figure out how to deal with that sentence. Now, there have been different ways that people have taken sentences like this. There are those who already aren't really thrilled about the notion of a deity at all of any sort, and they will look at that and they'll say, well, yeah, of course they're going to say that God was sorry. I mean, all that's happening here is simply people who are pious and believe in God or whatever are simply telling the story after it happened, and they're just, you know, it's nothing special. They're just going ahead and filling in the blanks. It's an example that we are not created in God's image, but that instead we have created God in our image. That's what's going on here. Now, that is not a necessary conclusion, and I would argue, of course, that's not the conclusion to take, but that's where some people go with this. With this simplistic view of what God is like. The other view is to say that God is no different from other gods and goddesses you hear about. For example, in ancient Roman and ancient Greek mythology, you find that the gods and goddesses are not perfect beings. They have flaws, they have character flaws, and so what the suggestion is that's all we're seeing here, is we see a God who is not perfect. And in fact, there is a school of thought that would argue that Israel has been actually worshiping three different gods at the same time, not in the sense of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, not like that, but because the word God in the Old Testament is the Hebrew word El, which was a name for a Canaanite high god, and because we have the name Yahweh used in the Old Testament, and we also have the title Adonai, which means Lord, being used, this school of thought says that actually El and Yahweh and Adonai are different gods. And what we're seeing here is this particular God, Yahweh, is the flawed one. That's a school of thought that people say too. Again, that's not a necessary conclusion to reach, and I'm convinced it's the wrong conclusion. But we still end up coming back with this issue. What do we do with this sentence? How do we reconcile our tendency to think that God knows exactly what's going on and does it right the first time and doesn't make mistakes with this sentence that the Lord was sorry that he had made Saul king over Israel? Well, in order for us to answer this question, I think we have to bring about one more aspect about how it is we deal with the Old Testament narratives. Not only are they telling us the story of Israel and what Israel did and Israel experienced and what they didn't do and so on, but we have to understand that the Bible as a whole is revealing to us what God is like. That the Bible is showing us down through history, over the course of time, written down what God is like. And so when we read these narratives, and we see what Israel does and doesn't do, when we understand that this is meant to be a reflection of how they were understanding who God was, then we are able to grasp how we should respond in light of what we see God to be. Now, if that didn't make any sense, let me try to explain it a little bit easier here. If we see the scriptures as showing us what God is like, and we understand more of who God is and what God is like, then our response as to how we live and how we treat others and how we respond to different circumstances are meant to be a reflection of understanding that we are the people of God and need to do what we do as a reflection of what God is like. So here, in this sentence, what are we seeing? The Lord was sorry that he made Saul king over Israel. I would suggest to you this is not saying that God made a mistake. This is not saying that God was in error or that God failed. What we see instead is God having a character quality that cares about the people over which he is king and Lord. You see, Israel was demanding a king, and God never had to give them that king. God was not obligated to give in to Israel's demands. God was not required to do what they wanted. In fact, through Samuel, he gave them reason to reconsider. But they didn't reconsider and persisted, and God chose to grant them their demand. Now, one of the things we can sometimes do is try to imagine what would have happened if God hadn't done that. And we have to be careful with that, because that ends up being speculation, and the challenge is we are not told what might have been, we're simply told what did happen. But if we were to think for a moment, what if God didn't grant Israel their king? What would the circumstances have been? I think there is a parallel to be found in Genesis chapter 10. This is the story of the Tower of Babel, where the people of the world are supposed to go out and scatter and populate all the world, but they stayed in one place and decided, let's build a tower that can reach up to the heavens. And the comment is made in that story, where God says, if they are able to accomplish this, then they won't be limited by anything else that they try to do. And the implication in that comment was that if these human beings in this scenario are able just to do whatever, whatever, and carry on, pretty soon it's going to get to the point of no return and things are not going to work out the way they ought to. I think we could be facing a similar situation with this. If God said to the people of Israel through Samuel, forget it, you're not getting a God, you're not getting a king, that's not my will and purpose for you right now, no. The people who were already rejecting God as king, I think, would have persisted in that. They would have come upon somebody, maybe it would have been Saul, maybe somebody else. They would have come up with somebody that they would have made king anyway, and then they would have persisted even more in this situation of being in rebellion against God and rejecting God. It just would have piled on. The situation would have been exacerbated. It would have gotten worse, and Israel would be even further from God if God had just said, no, I'm not doing that for you. But instead, because God cares for Israel, God chose instead to say, all right, I will do that. I will pick this king for you. And again, God did not pick somebody that he just knew would fail. I'll show them. I'll give them a king that won't do the right job at all, and then they'll learn to see it my way. What kind of character would we see in God if that's what he did? That would be a pretty capricious God. That would not be a God that we would easily come to and approach boldly to receive grace in our time of need, right? That's not the kind of character we would have. But God gave them exactly the kind of king they were looking for. Saul is precisely the kind of person they wanted. God granted their request, if you will. And then he told them the stipulations. And then, as he does with us, in granting us the will to choose how we will respond in situations, he let them play it out. And in doing that, he watched things go south on them. He watched Saul reject God's authority. He saw the people of Israel being led further away. He saw them not having the successes that he was planning for them. And like a parent who has to, from time to time, try to give your children the wisdom and everything they need, but then you have to let them try it out, and you're standing back, biting your nails, watching things go, and you can be sorry that your kids end up having to experience that. And you wish they didn't, and you wish they didn't have to experience that pain, and you wish they didn't have to learn the hard way, and you wish they didn't have to find out that they should have listened in the first place. It's a frustrating thing to see. And I think when we read that God was sorry that he made Saul king over Israel, is he was sorry about the result of what the Israelites demanded. In love and in care for them, He granted them that latitude. He gave in to their request, if you will. But he was sorry because things weren't working out the way that God had intended. But you see, God had always intended to give them a king. God had always intended to grant them that request, if you will. It just came 40 years too soon. Because when David is anointed to be king and then he takes the throne, he is the king God had in mind all along. Back in Genesis chapter 49, when Jacob, who gets his name changed to Israel, before his death is blessing all 12 of his sons, he comes to his fourth son, the one named Judah, and says, "Judah, the scepter will never depart from you." This very kingly, monarch-sounding image of holding a scepter is pronounced over Judah, this fourth son, and David is a descendant of Judah. And then by extension, on the human side of things, Jesus is a descendant of David. And Jesus is the king of the Jews, as it said over the cross in his crucifixion. God always intended to give Israel a king. Israel was jumping the gun. But God responds even after this abortive attempt at having a monarch. And God is sorry that they have to experience what they do, but he brings about redemption, appoints the proper king in the first place, and Israel is at the high point of their life together when David is on the throne. God is a complex character. God has layers. And if we see God as one of those well-developed characters, like in a well-written novel, we are able to find ourselves engaging with God in a much more significant way than just thinking of God as the perfect power in the sky who just does everything right. Let's understand that God has emotions, that God feels for God's people, that God even, one could say, hurts when he sees the beloved ones that he's created, messing things up and doing it wrong. And like the heavenly parent that God is, wishing that we, his children, would follow in the steps that he has directed for us. Let's learn. Let's trust. Let's understand that God has a way for us to follow that is the best way to follow, and endeavor to discover what that is, trusting him, surrendering him to him in all of that. And finding the blessing of doing it his way all along. Amen.